We podcast at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. You can email us your feedback, questions, and story ideas to comments@fsrn.org. Our newscast is produced by Tina Gysi and Monica Lopez. Our headlines editor is Shannon Young. Our Washington, D.C. editor is Leanne Caldwell. Today's technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Antonio Ortiz and Jin Lei. From KPFK in L.A., I'm Ara Bogado.
And this is WBAI New York. It's 7:01, time for Off the Hook. And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined this week by Jim.
Greetings from Kuala Lumpur.
And Arsene over there.
Hello.
Mike.
Hi.
And on the other side of the room, not Kevin.
Hello.
Down in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
Welcome back to the land of freedom, Emmanuel.
You're being sarcastic, I hope.
Because me?
Every time I come here, there's less freedom to be had. So I don't know if you're being facetious or not.
Not me.
Well, the funny thing is, I was in Malaysia, I was in Singapore. I'm still severely jet-lagged. I don't know what time to wake up or anything like that. But it's the right time now. It's not 7 in the morning for me, at least, although it feels a little bit like it. Singapore was not what I expected. It was not this Orwellian nightmare. It was basically just a rather nice place with a lot of posted rules and a fascination for preventing terrorism. Literally, if you're on the subway, you're waiting for a train, they're playing videos, little plays that they've put together that show the suspicious guy getting on the train and show him leaving the package and walking away, and what responsible passengers should do, how they should stop the guy leaving the suspicious package, and if he refuses to take the package, then you know that you're in trouble and you have to press the special button and talk to the train operator. They show what happens if you don't do that. They actually show a train blowing up. This is the kind of thing you want to see when you're waiting for your next train. You want to see what it looks like when it blows up. They show footage of the London bombing, of the Madrid bombing, of bombings in India. They show body parts very graphically. This is all while you're waiting for trains or while you're even on a train and you have one that has a video screen on it. It surpasses London as far as the hysteria, but that's really the only way it does. There aren't cameras in as many places as in London, and it doesn't feel like so many people are constantly watching you.
And of course, knowing you, you taped this, and this will be up on YouTube soon.
Well,
right?
I taped as much of it as I could. There was an awful lot of it, and I didn't have a video camera. I just had my regular digital camera. And they play it in all different languages too, because they speak so many different languages there. So it's in Arabic at one point, it's in Chinese, and it's in English.
So are you going to put this up on YouTube?
If it came out okay. I haven't really looked yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Emmanuel?
Yes.
About 10 years ago, someone wrote an article about their impressions of Singapore, described it as a Disneyland with a death penalty. How would you... what was your impression?
Well, I've never been to Disneyland, so I couldn't really tell you, but I'll tell you this. There is an island just off the coast of Singapore, which is billed as a shopping island, and that's what I would consider to be Disneyland, because it's, I don't know about the death penalty there, but it's a nightmare. It really is a nightmare. People just go there, and they pay. They pay to get onto this island, because you have to take a special train to get there, and then they're just set loose, and they can just buy all kinds of crap and ride little amusement things and basically just be with a whole lot of similar-minded people. That, to me, was a nightmare.
Did you attend the protest while you were in Singapore?
You know, I didn't hear anything about any protest, and I didn't think that protest even happened in Singapore. Do you know something I don't?
Well, they're pretty rare, but there was a special protest on the 25th of August in Singapore. And what's unique about it is that the marchers are not human, but they're these kind of action figures, I guess you would describe them. And they're protesting the activities of Odex, which is a anime importer in Singapore, which is doing something with the Copyright Act. But I guess organizing a march in Singapore is just not the done thing.
You say these aren't humans. These are anime characters. They have to be humans behind the anime characters, right?
Yeah, but
unless they reach some kind of technology I don't understand.
Well, but you can have only a few humans and a really big march if each one has enough action figures.
Okay.
And people should go on the internet and look at these pictures. The guy who put them up, the URL is textfiend.net/zerohero, that's spelled out zerohero, /P=453. And there's all these funny pictures of action figures doing a protest march.
Okay. Well, I don't think there's any law against just being silly.
Well, apparently the police did come and break it up, so... I don't know what happened after that.
I saw very few cops there, but the cops I did see were kind of scary. They looked like they were 12, and they always traveled in packs of four, and they had guns, and they walked very slowly. But other than that, I didn't see any arrests. I didn't see anybody seeming to be victimized. It's a strange place. There's no question about that. And, of course, some of the rules are rather bizarre. But look what I have. That's a pack of chewing gum that I bought in Singapore. In fact, if you look at it, you'll see that it was actually made in Singapore. So it's hard to do, but you can do it. You can do it if you try.
It says made in China.
Well, yeah, but if you keep reading, you'll see it's made for Singapore. It says it on there. I saw it myself. It's in tiny print.
Oh, under the license. It's imported by a Singapore company. Okay. And it says, keep your country clean. And there's this graphic of chewing gum in a mouth. And then it's chewing gum in, I guess it looks like a matchbook. And then the matchbook goes in the garbage can.
Because those are the only two places that gum should be, in your mouth or in the trash. Or maybe in the package
before
it goes. Yeah,
there's an intermediate step of what I'm continuing to call a matchbook, although I'm not sure
what
it is.
Well, that's how you transport it from the package to your mouth. And if you drop it, there are steps on what to do then.
Yes, it's very complicated.
Yeah. People were finding bits of chewing gum underneath seats. So it was a problem. It might even still be a problem. It's something everybody talks about, and there is a sense of humor there. Don't take the gum. That gum's worth something.
Sorry.
That's Singapore gum. Redbird, you join us.
Good evening.
You had wait a minute. Hang on. Let me find your microphone. Try that again.
All right.
Yeah. You had
Good
a traffic
evening.
Nightmare over there in New Jersey.
It's not fun.
Yeah. Well, that's why they call it New Jersey. anyway, so Singapore is a very strange place, more open than I thought it would be. And if you go to Little India, which is the Indian section, I see people chewing gum there. I see people jaywalking. Actually, I saw people jaywalking in other parts, too. So
jaywalking, gum chewing, what's next?
I don't know.
Criminal anarchy?
Anything's possible. I didn't see very much littering, but I did see litter. I did see things on the ground. Not very much, though. Then again, living in New York... anything seems clean compared. Okay, so and of course the phone deals that I got using the SIM cards in both Singapore and Malaysia were really good. Something like an average of 10 cents a minute to call the United States using voice over IP, but indistinguishable from a regular plus one call.
You sounded good. We spoke to you.
Sorry?
I said you sounded good. We spoke to you.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they give you the option. Why wouldn't they always just route calls over VoIP?
I don't know. It's something also when they give you the book, it's an amazing package they give you. They give this whole little manual. You get to choose your phone number from all these different cards that they have set up. So you go and pick your number, and then they give you that, and they give you the SIM, and you give them the equivalent of something like $5, and you already have that. But inside that book, there was no mention of this particular routing code. However, the people at the desk would tell you that if you want to use that, you can simply dial the prefix. And in my case, it was 13100 and then country code number. That was from Malaysia. And Singapore is something else. It was a different prefix. But it was. I hope it's like that in other countries, too, that we visit so that we can save a substantial amount.
So you have to depend on the teller to give you that code then?
Well, you have to just be insistent and ask or do some research and look into it.
Interesting.
They do exist.
And it works. I mean, when you called me after the show, I got your caller ID and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I could call you back at great expense to myself.
No, not really, because I was talking to people from the States who were calling Malaysia, paying about 6 cents a minute, and I wasn't paying anything.
With a calling card or something. But if I just press the redial button on my cell phone, mm-hmm. It will be wildly expensive.
That's because you don't have a good deal.
Well.
Don't have a good international deal. I looked up... all kinds of things on telephone numbers in Malaysia, and if you go to Wikipedia, there's all sorts of information on all the dialing prefixes they use. It's fascinating. Every country is different, and they have details about the voice over IP situation there and how people can access that. So hopefully, it'll bring the cost of calls down even further. Remember, a few years ago, it would cost us a huge amount to make any of these calls, and mobile phones weren't even possible. So we've come a long way already. Okay. Silly headline or silly story of the week. Actually, this is just the kind of thing that makes me feel really good knowing it's out there. It's old. It came from June, actually. But still, we didn't look into this nearly enough. In an attempt to forestall the arrival of 1984, a California state senator has introduced a bill to ban employers from inserting identification devices under the skin of employees. Isn't that so reassuring to know that they're looking out for our interests by making a law to prohibit your employer from sticking something under your skin?
It really bothers me that people can force you to get an injection of anything, really, but specifically RFID.
Who can force you to do this?
Schools force you to do it.
Schools can force you to get injections of RFID?
Not RFID, but injections of other things.
You're about 5 years too early, I think. I don't think that's happening yet.
Well, I'm just talking about injections in general.
Yeah, but schools do all kinds of messed up things to people. I'll grant you that. And all sorts of rights go out the window. Yes, Bernie?
How about a bill that would prohibit anyone's employer from getting under one's skin?
Yeah, well, that's a bit more nebulous. I'm not quite sure how you would define that. But basically, Democratic Senator Joe Simichian, never said that name before, has several proposals to ban employers or anyone else from requiring a person to have radio frequency identification devices implanted. The senator expressed concerns that information provided by RFID could easily be stolen with an inexpensive monitor or track people's movements. And he says, when people understand the vulnerability of the technology and the absolute lack of any privacy protections or limits on information that can be broadcast, they understand why it's a legitimate source of concern. The use of implanted RFIDs makes you think we really are in a world we never could have imagined.
And it seems they cause cancer, too.
What, you don't agree?
I don't agree with that.
How do you know they don't cause cancer? We haven't had these things very long.
You don't know, well... Just from the way that they were explaining it, it didn't seem like they were even very sure that the result is actually that they cause cancer. I mean,
what do you think they said day two after they installed asbestos into buildings? Boy, we have no evidence this is going to cause cancer.
No, but that's different. I mean,
how is that different? We don't know. We're sticking devices under our skin that are transmitting things.
Well, no, they're not transmitting things. That's the issue. I mean, if there's a test program where they've got all these people or animals injected with RFID chips and they're bombarding them with RF radiation, which, by the way, is not ionizing and doesn't cause cancer on its own. It can have other health effects like heating tissue and stuff like that, but it isn't enough to mutate DNA to cause cancer. Then maybe there may be health effects, but I don't. You know, it's a glass and case thing. If it is true that there's some relation between that and cancer, I would bet that it's actually the encapsulation of the RFID chip that's causing it, and not anything related to the RFID chip itself.
Thank you, Dr. Redfield.
I'm just saying, that's my theory. All right. I could be wrong. If anyone could prove me wrong, I'd like to hear it.
All right. Well, we'll see in about 20 years, I guess, when everybody has these little things under their skin. I don't know. I just think sticking anything under your skin is asking for trouble.
No, I wouldn't recommend it, but...
But you know what's going to happen? You know, everyone's going to be doing this. It's going to be the way to keep track of suspicious people, or to keep track of people before they become suspicious. It's really insane.
Can we keep track of people who hold suspicions about other people? That seems much more useful.
That's going to take a lot of RFID tags. That's
I don't
sure.
see what the big deal with putting stuff like in your skin. Like, can
you
just...
see? This is the attitude that's going to take over in the next few years.
I mean, I understand that it's a big deal, but like, can't you just wear a bracelet or something with the same thing? Like, why do you have to get people?
You can
to...
leave the bracelet at home, and then they don't know where you are.
Yeah, you'd have to take off your arm.
It could be an untake. Offable bracelet.
Did they give Paris Hilton or one of these celebrities one of those?
The bracelet I'm wearing around my wrist right now is, if it's possible to remove, it's certainly very difficult, and this is not, you know, a high-tech device.
You gave me an idea, though, Redbird. Why don't we simply make the test, the guinea pigs of this, celebrities? We'll just make celebrities, they're the ones that have to have the RFID things implanted, and politicians, those two. And we'll see how they do in a few decades, and then the rest of us can make our minds up, if we still have any.
Let's try it.
New law in the UK. Motorists who use a handheld mobile phone or fiddle with satellite navigation system while driving could be jailed for up to 2 years. Prosecutors have said they could be charged with dangerous driving in a dramatically tougher approach to such offenses. Those caught fiddling with an MP3 music player or texting on a mobile at the wheel could also face the charge. In a surprising development, though, Og Vorbis is exempt. Only MP3. It's true.
What?
Prosecutions. If it's open source, you walk. Prosecutions will be brought whenever it is judged that using the equipment posed a danger, such as forcing a car to swerve or causing a distracted motorist to jump a red light. Those who kill while using a mobile phone will face 14 years behind bars under the charge of causing death by dangerous driving.
Isn't using a radio just as dangerous?
I think so. I think eating a sandwich is just as dangerous.
This is the thing. Is any of that covered?
I don't think so. I think they're only covering certain items. It's sort of an enhanced punishment. If you're caught texting or playing with an MP3 player, then they enhance your sentence based on that. I think the whole thing should just be driving like an idiot. If you do that and cause harm, then that's the law.
Here's the thing I don't understand. If you kill someone with any device other than a car, you go to jail for a very long time. If you kill someone with a car... whether it's because you're texting or because you're drunk or because you're just an idiot or whatever the reason is, you get a much lesser sentence. I don't understand this part of the law, which makes killing people with automobiles less of a crime than killing people with other dangerous objects. And this is something that is much more of a concern to me than people's supposed right to be distracted
while
they
drive. Most times people who kill people with automobiles aren't doing it intentionally, whereas when they're using other objects, they're usually doing it with the intent to kill someone. I think if someone runs over people intentionally, the sentence is
But wrong. In most states in the United States, vehicular homicide is less of a crime than manslaughter or other ways of accidentally killing people.
But in every state that has vehicular homicide laws, if you actually see somebody off in the distance in your car, while you're in your car, and go and drive them over, they don't call that vehicular homicide. You're using the car as a weapon. It's regular homicide in those cases.
So you're saying if you're not looking where you're driving,
right,
and you're just hitting people at random, that's okay?
No, it's not okay. It's just a lesser crime because... you really didn't mean to do it. You did it because you were a damn idiot.
Look, if it's an accident, I think it's treated differently than if it's on purpose.
But automobiles are inherently dangerous. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but...
But people don't die with them all over the place, all the time, every day.
They do serve other purposes.
No, they don't. I've walked down many a street with automobiles, many a sidewalk I've walked down with automobiles in the street next to me. Not one of them has aimed at me, let alone hit me. Okay?
Well, I can show you some streets. Where that won't hold true. I'll have to make some phone calls first, though. All right, continuing on. What's this about the Justice Department opposing net neutrality? The Justice Department last Thursday said internet service providers should be allowed to charge a fee for priority web traffic. The agency told the FCC, which is reviewing high-speed internet practices, that it is opposed to net neutrality, which is the principle that all internet sites should be equally accessible to any web user. My God, what a concept. And that's, of course, the way it's been, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Several phone and cable companies such as AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast have previously said they want the option to charge some users more money for loading certain content or websites faster than others. Now, this kind of result could diminish or delay network I'm reading the wrong thing here. The Justice Department said imposing a net neutrality regulation could hamper development of the internet and prevent service providers from upgrading or expanding their networks. It could also shift the entire burden of implementing costly network expansions and improvements onto customers, and such a delay could diminish or delay network expansion and improvement. Now, of course, that flies in the face of the interpretation of many other people who believe that this will be used to keep certain sites off limits, to make it harder to connect to certain sites. And the story that I'm reading comes from the Associated Press, and I think it says something very interesting at the end. Supporters of internet regulation have said that phone and cable companies could discriminate against certain websites and services were this to go through, were net neutrality to be defeated. And I just find it fascinating that they would refer to people who are opposed to what the phone companies want and what the Justice Department now supports, refer to those people as supporters of internet regulation. How many of us want to stand up and say, I'm a supporter of internet regulation? You are?
Well, I'm a supporter of preventing the corporations from regulating the internet.
All right, but you see, you're falling into their trap if you call yourself somebody who wants to regulate the internet, because that goes against free speech in the eyes of so many people. So I just think it's very interesting that the story decided to phrase the opponents as supporters of internet regulation.
See, now this is interesting because almost every time I read an article or hear a story on the news or anything else about net neutrality, you can never tell what side the person who's giving the arguments is on, because mm-hmm. they all sound like they support net neutrality as opposed to non-net neutrality or regulation. I mean, because regulation really is what they're looking for. They're looking for companies to pay money to access or to have their content more easily accessed, which is...
Isn't that regulation?
That's regulation.
That sounds like regulation to me. Those are the supporters of internet regulation.
Right. So, I mean, it's really, really difficult to tell what they're talking about, because it seems like all the arguments that they're giving against net neutrality are actually arguments that support it. It's
and to
awkward.
The average person, it must be incredibly confusing.
Oh, people, I think that most people who listen to news stories about this have absolutely no idea what they're even talking about.
Except those news stories are written by organizations that are against net neutrality. So that's the angle, and this is what we see in the Associated Press story. The angle that is presented is very slanted.
This is where a little knowledge of history, and history totally unrelated to technology, can be useful. The correct analogy in this situation is highways in the United States between 1920 and the 1950s. Starting in the 1920s, most states would have a toll road along the major routes, the Pennsylvania Turnpike, for example, a number of others. These were pretty much the main thoroughfares through a state, but there was usually only one or two of them in every state, and they would take a fee from everybody using the roads, truckers, drivers, and whatever. Every other road in the state, every other highway going cross-country was in relatively bad shape. It wasn't until the Interstate Highway Act in the 1950s came along, which ended up taxing gasoline. Every user, in other words, paid a tiny little bit, whether they were a commercial user or, you know, just the average Joe citizen. And since there were so many users, this created a very robust infrastructure, the interstate highway system as we know it today. It wasn't the non-net neutrality or the non-highway neutrality of the 1920s to the 1950s that created the great system. It was after they made it open to everyone that it became what it is today. Same analogy, I think, applies to the internet.
Except we're going in reverse here. We're already open, and now we're looking
right.
to restrict that.
Right, exactly.
I just don't see what benefit anyone but the people that provide internet access are going to get from this. Because right now, like, you know, you pay more for hosting, your website's going to work faster. So we sort of have that already. But now it's going to be you're going to have to pay more for hosting, and you're going to have to pay all these providers to, you know, get users to your website faster.
In effect, what it's doing is preventing people who don't have the resources or funds to get high-speed access in terms of hosting and pay the companies to have their content delivered faster from actually putting stuff online.
It's not even just about money, because these companies will exercise control over who they accept money from and who they won't. They will accept money from their business partners and the people they have alliances with and whatever. You and I will not be able to pay, say, Comcast to get our traffic across if net neutrality is destroyed. That's what's really frightening.
Yes, Bernie.
I just wanted to add to what Mike said, that if this, besides from a lot of people not even being included in the bidding process, the whole idea of a bidding process, which is what companies like Verizon and AT&T and Comcast would love to have, a highest bidder gets traffic to the front of the list. Guess who the lowest bidder or someone who can't afford to bid, guess where their information on their website gets? It gets at the bottom of the list and maybe routed at a speed of 1 bit per second or something, to the point where it's just not going to reach viewers. So it would be a really bad thing if this net neutrality is not enforced. And yes, I'm in favor of this form of internet regulation, believe it or not.
Yeah, but please don't say it like that. It turns people off when you say you're in favor of internet regulation. It's not what you're in favor of. You're in favor of keeping it open.
You're right. But this is a really difficult argument, and
You're regulating the people who want to close it off, basically. But that's
put it that way.
Yeah.
We need to figure out a new way to. We need to figure out a soundbite way of expressing this, and I haven't figured it out.
How about keep the internet open, or as open as it could possibly be, or maybe open it more?
Comma, support net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah.
Should be a semicolon.
And let people know net neutrality is not something new. Net neutrality is the way it is right now. And they want to take it away.
If you remember all those websites like Verizon really sucks, Ford really sucks, look at them now, folks, because it's maybe the last time you get to see them.
Well, that's a good point, because if it was a site about one of the phone companies criticizing them, they could easily make it so much more difficult for anybody to access it by there not being net neutrality, by having a premium price. If you want to load a particular site, or if no amount of money could possibly get them to load your site quicker or in a timely fashion. So yeah, it's something to be concerned about, and it continues. We've been talking about this for over a year. Speaking of unpopular websites, or unpopular at least here, this is something that I find to be fascinating, and please tell me if it's not as fascinating as I think it is. I talked about this yesterday on the other radio show. And apparently, Al-Qaeda has a media production house. It's kind of funny to even think of that, but they do. The terrorist group has a media production house known as As-Sahab, the As-Sahab Foundation for Islamic Media Publication. And they're the ones who put out the Osama bin Laden videos, among other top 40 material. And instead of the way they used to get the word out, by simply dropping videotapes off in various places, they now have a much more professional way of doing this. Interesting. So they have a website. And
No. Yes. Go ahead.
All right. They have a website called sahab.com, sahab.com.
This is what I'm not clear that they're the same organization.
You're not?
No. It didn't seem obvious to me, because I went to that organization and it just seemed like a bunch of stuff. There was no video at all that I could find.
Well, no, the video is not posted there. The company, though, the company is registered, looks like it's registered through Qatar or Qatar or Qatar, whatever you want to.
I went to this website and I looked at it through Google Translate, which maybe didn't do the best job. But as far as I could tell, it was just like a bunch of religious leaders posting their opinions of various things. It didn't seem tied to this media production at all.
Hmm.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone who actually speaks Arabic could explain
well,
to me.
Well, they're known as the official As-Sahab website, maybe that information is wrong. I found that in several sources.
It just looked to me like remember the Al Jazeera.info guy or something,
yeah.
And the people were shutting him down because they thought he was related to the cable channel. I would just like someone who actually speaks the language to tell me before I'm sure.
Okay. Well, anyway, to continue with what has been found so far, sahab.com allegedly is a site for the As-Sahab media production house of Al-Qaeda, and they run a bulletin board at sahab.net, and that's a very popular bulletin board. I'm looking at some of the numbers here, and 265,655 posts in one particular contentious topic. And basically, that could be the source of the chatter that we keep hearing about. We always are hearing that the authorities are monitoring chatter. I always wonder where it comes from. And this supposedly is one of the sources. Nice huge bulletin board of people talking in Arabic about all sorts of things. And I did a translation, too, with Google, and saw all kinds of kind of cryptic remarks like it's time to walk the dog and things like that. I don't know what exactly they're talking about. The most interesting part about all of this was when I did a traceroute to the system and found that it terminated not in the Middle East, not in some foreign country, but in Dallas, Texas. Now, a couple of people have said to me, yeah, that's the proof that the U.S. government is actually behind the whole thing. And they said it in such a nonchalant way that I'm like, you know, if that really was true, shouldn't you be a lot more excited, because that's a smoking gun right there? I don't know. I don't know what it means. That's something I hope our listeners can look into a little bit more. But it would be fascinating. Imagine if the production house of Al-Qaeda is actually located in Dallas, or at least their computer is.
People can get hosting wherever they want. What's the big deal?
But don't you think it would be kind of silly for the main enemies against the United States to trust their machine in the country that's going to be looking it over in all sorts of different ways?
No, and I don't
think we can't even post controversial information in our own country. How in the world can Al-Qaeda do it?
I mean, the people who are actually pulling off attacks aren't idiots. They're not posting stuff on bulletin boards, you know, discussing what's going to happen. I mean, the people who are using these bulletin boards are just, you know, crazies. I mean, you know, how else do you describe them?
Well, something that's affiliated with Al-Qaeda in Dallas, Texas just seems a little weird to me. Maybe I'm being naive here, but just something like that going unnoticed by the mass media and by the administration, there's something really suspicious about that if that's in fact what's happening.
I was going to mention a couple of years ago, 60 Minutes did a thing on Islamic websites, radical Islamic websites, and they found in Dallas, Texas, that they had actually broken in hacked a internet service provider and carved out an unknown bulletin board there that had been there for months. And so if they can do it once, they might do it again. So maybe it's a smoking gun. Maybe it's they're using our own technology and resources against us.
Well, at the same time, I mean, if it's such a popular site and it's so obvious that it's being hosted in Texas, I mean, you know, it's something that the government probably has its eye on anyway.
Which is why it seems incredibly foolish to keep it there if, in fact, it's
what
it claims to be.
Yeah, but what threat is coming out of that bulletin board? I mean,
well, I don't know. I don't know if any threat's coming out of the bulletin board. But if this is, in fact, as links indicate, the media production house of Al-Qaeda, I would think that a lot of people would consider that a big threat.
If I was the CIA and had a number of suspicious people, I'd rather they talked in my courtyard where I could eavesdrop
on them. Of course,
but
don't you see that's the whole reason why if you were the people doing it, that's the last place you'd want to put it. Doesn't that make sense?
It's a bulletin board. I mean, it's a public computer accessible.
It's more than a bulletin board. The bulletin board is one part of the website. Well, the website is .com. The bulletin board is .net.
Okay. So, but still, I mean, it's a public forum of information. It doesn't matter where physically it's located. And there's two possible cases. Like Jim said, either they're using it for something nefarious, in which case, fine. You know, there's no reason to shut it down if it's in our jurisdiction. And or two, it's you know, totally benign, and you know, it's just a bunch of crazy people talking on a bulletin board. And in which case, what threat is it? And just who cares?
Except that it's allegedly run by something affiliated with Al-Qaeda in Texas and unrestricted in any way. Don't you think that's a little bit odd that it can just operate openly like this?
Clarify for people who don't know that, like, a huge percentage of the hosting companies in the United States are in Texas because I guess they have no environmental regulation, so electricity is cheap or something. I don't know. But a lot of websites are in Texas, so it's not.
Well, it's just that to me, there's no differentiating factor as far as physical location when the resource is on the internet. To me, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter to me where the servers are. You can access it over the internet.
Well, yeah, but in reality land, if you put something in the United States and you violate United States moral values or whatever, they're going to come down hard on you. And I'm just surprised that they haven't come down hard on this if it's what it purports to be. That's my only...
They're going to come down hard on the ISP, not the individual.
Well, whatever. This apparently has been around for a very long time. And I doubt I'm the first person to have made the connection. So it's just very odd and weird and strange.
Emmanuel?
Yes, Bernie.
This reminds me of that case several months ago, or a year or so ago, where an individual was prosecuted for making Al-Manar available to home satellite viewers mm-hmm. by selling them a home satellite TV system that they could, that would allow them to watch Al-Manar, which the U.S. State Department has had defined as the TV channel as a terrorist organization.
Right, and, right.
Now, so this reminds me of that. So if it, in fact this is the outlet for the Osama bin Laden videos, why wouldn't this fall under the same category, and why isn't this being shut down? And frankly, if it were the CIA who was using these alleged Osama bin Laden videos as a puppet boogeyman sort of ruse, why wouldn't the CIA just host these in a country that would where at least it would have a veneer of authenticity as it coming from, you know, an alleged terrorist state? It's very, very, this whole thing is very strange.
That's my point. That is very strange.
But Bernie, what's the benefit to the United States to shut the site down if they have jurisdiction to say anytime they want with the Patriot Act or whatever other form of legislation is available? Hey, look, we want the whole, you know, the whole machine. Just give it to us. You know, let's take a look at what's on it. What's the benefit of shutting that down?
Well, I think there's no benefit in shutting it down because they get to monitor the traffic if it's up.
Right, which leads me to ask why, who in their right mind, if they were affiliated with some enemy organization, would want to put something right in the hands of the U.S. government? It doesn't make sense.
Are you really of the opinion that the NSA couldn't monitor this on the internet in some other country?
They couldn't have physical access to it. They couldn't walk into the building and take the machine and do whatever they want to it. No, it's not the same thing. Putting something in Texas, I'm sorry, it's not the same thing as sticking it in a foreign country in a supposedly a friendly regime.
It could be known was what's known as a honeypot.
Yeah. Tell us.
Well, listeners who aren't familiar with the term honeypot, it's along the lines of what people would do to put honey in a pot to attract bees, and then they would capture the bees if you're a beekeeper or something. I used to be a beekeeper myself. It was a way to get bees, but the government has used honeypot. Other people and the system administrators have set up virtual servers that appear to be servers that are do not have appropriate security, and they attract people or rogue programs designed to infiltrate these servers, and they can see who's trying to attack them. Maybe this government, our government, is trying to do the same thing: set up a honeypot, so to speak, so that they can see who it attracts and
but,
then focus
you know, if,
on those people.
If they were doing that, don't you think they'd be a little smarter than to put it in Dallas, Texas? Don't you think they'd try at least to put it someplace else where it might seem like it was authentic?
The whole thing is really strange.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get more information on it. And if it's not affiliated with Al-Qaeda at all, our apologies to those
like Mike,
poor
like
people.
Mike said, if any of our listeners reads Arabic, it would be we'd really appreciate it if you could read this site and give us your opinion of really what's going on it, because we can't read it in its native language.
Yeah, but it is purported to be that particular site, and if it's not, then we need to make sure people know that as well. Okay, let's read some mail, and then we'll take some phone calls. Our phone number, 212-209-2900. Programming note, I won't be here next week, but you guys will, hopefully. And I'm going to be in Austria next. I'm just going all over the world this year. It's amazing.
You mean Australia?
No, I mean Austria.
You sure?
If I meant Australia, I wouldn't have come all the way back from Malaysia and then go back to Australia. These 24-hour plane rides are just insane.
It would have been only 8 hours from Malaysia to Austria.
Australia.
No, Austria.
No, actually, it's 11 hours to Sweden, and Austria is further away, so it would have been more.
No, it's not.
It's closer. Maybe. I'm not sure.
I don't think it is.
Draw a line between Kuala Lumpur and Sweden, and Austria will be along that line, which means it's closer.
I'm not sure.
Well, not the line we flew. We flew over Russia.
But you're flying the wrong line.
Well, I think we went the wrong direction to start with. I think we should have gone east instead of west, but let's not even get into that. You're off the hook in the June 13th, 2007 show. You quoted Michael Chertoff replying to an interviewer saying, "Imagine that our troops in Afghanistan raided an Al-Qaeda safe house and captured a computer containing the cell phone number of operatives in Europe. Wouldn't it be important to know whether one of those cell phone numbers was used to book a transatlantic flight?" Forgetting Al-Qaeda safe house, how about the cell phones that didn't set off the London car bombs? If these phones contain the phone numbers, I sure as hell would want them in a screening procedure for passengers flying out of Britain. Just as the bomb makers made a mistake when their cell phones were preserved for lack of their bombs exploding, I would welcome the mistake of a dumb hijacker using the cell number stored in the bomb's cell phone as a contact number. This highlights a general failing you guys constantly make. If some security measure doesn't close 100% of the security gap, in your mind it becomes useless. There is, however, a middle ground in that it makes it more difficult for Rage Boy. Who's Rage Boy? Is that some kind of... I don't know who that's referring to exactly, to do his dirty deeds. Sure, there are other ways to detonate bombs other than a cell phone, but using a cell phone is a convenience. I have no problem inconveniencing Rage Boy. So I think you should consider that it doesn't take closing the last 1% before a security measure should be considered. I certainly appreciate your privacy stances expressed on the program, but if you're going to require 100% perfection or no security at all, people will dismiss your privacy positions in general as non-serious. And this is Dan from Texas. Dan, maybe you want to take a little trip to Dallas. he blames Jim for this, by the way. You're supposed to be the adult supervision on the program.
Oh, I am.
Well, look, I don't. I think he's getting the wrong impression. I don't think any of us said that the security measures have to be 100% and that there shouldn't be security measures. I think the point is that most of the rationale for the security measures is very misleading and really just kind of ultimately takes away a lot of civil liberties that we have and doesn't necessarily improve the security. I mean, yeah, sure, of course, it's important to track, you know, cell phones in case there's a stupid hijacker. But in my opinion, I think the people who are actually going to pull off attacks successfully are far more sophisticated than, you know, using a temporary cell phone number and then, you know, keeping it for a year or keeping it for a couple months. I really think that it takes a lot more planning than is conveyed by the government to pull off these attacks. And I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, we need security measures, but it's, I think in most of the cases, we're barking up the wrong tree.
It's not 100% perfection or no security at all, as this guy is saying. That's not the distinction we're making. The distinction we're making is that this security adds nothing to the existing security that already is in place. There, you will never get 100% security, and nobody is arguing for no security at all.
I mean, this is something we've said on the show before. If the airport security, the activity screening, the luggage screening, the what have you screening is actually effective, then a committed person who really wishes to destroy my way of life or what have you should be able to sit on the plane right next to me, and it shouldn't be a problem. Like, I don't care who gets on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
I care what they do when they're on the plane. And that is the sort of security that is worth investing in, not this, like, crazy scanning phone numbers nonsense.
Right. And we've convinced ourselves that 9/11 is something that now is a lot harder to pull off. It really isn't. It really isn't that much harder. All right, so you don't use box cutters. You use something else. People can take over an airplane with their fists if they have to. It's anything is possible. So you can add all these little phone number checks to security, and all it's going to do is create an atmosphere of surveillance and fear. It won't really add anything to the security. All right, 212-209-2900. Shall we take some phone calls? We seem to have a lit switchboard here. I guess we're talking about a popular topic.
Uh-oh.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, dear. We really have to fix this phone system so it doesn't keep hopping all over the place. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Well,
speak up.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Good evening. You know, Bernie S., I think, is closer to the situation down there in Texas.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've never been to Texas, so I'm not that close.
No, but let me express my thought here. One of the reasons, you can't figure this out, because, you know, the same reason you don't have suspicions about 9/11, the Al-Qaeda is the Arab Legion of the CIA, and those agents that hijacked the planes, they were being run out of CIA-controlled flight schools.
You don't think anyone else is capable of doing this except the CIA?
No, but I'm trying to tell you the same way we're killing our own people and them and getting them to kill each other over there, it's a circular thing that's going on. So, I mean, think about it. Go back into the history of how these groups have run, the cells are run in this country. Okay?
What's your source?
What's my source? You go to that website. That's your source.
What source? What website?
good Arabic website in Texas.
Do you read Arabic?
No, but what I'm trying to say is if you get someone who does, you'll find that it's a way that they're monitoring.
Okay, I'm asking you what your source is for what you're telling us.
The books I've read on 9/11, read 7 books on it.
Okay, can you name a couple, please?
Yeah, Synthetic Terror by Webster Tarpley. You read that one, that'll be better than 3 other books.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Thanks thanks for your call. All right, people are thinking at least. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I'm going to give you my name because what I'm going to tell you is very serious. My name is Anne.
Well, don't give us your full name. That's not wise. But go ahead. Just tell us what's on your mind.
I'm a victim of CIA black operations torture, and you need some websites. Spychips.com. Catherine Albrecht is a Harvard researcher who has been on the media, Coast to Coast AM, whatever she could get on, trying to tell about how the spy chips cause cancer. I have several chips that have been injected into me. I apparently know too much, and I'm getting all of these technologies that I'm going to tell you about. Look up bugsweep.com under electronic harassment and microwave detection, remote mind control technology. Washington Post article by Sharon Weinberger, Sunday, January 14th, 2007, W22. Don't read for opinion, read for the facts, like Dennis Kucinich tried to stop psychotronic weapons from going through, but they're using them. As I say, the only people whose opinions are worth anything are the victims. So if you read it that way, you're okay. If you read what the writer thinks or says, it's not worth anything.
Where did you get these chips? Where were you when these chips were implanted in you?
This is going to sound strange to you, but if you read David Morehouse's book...
No, you. Where were you?
But
you
I'm going
you.
To, in my house.
No, where were you when you got these chips
in my
implanted?
House. In my house.
She's saying she was in her house
by
when...
injection.
Okay, so...
Psychic Warrior by David Morehouse, who worked for the government... And I'll read you from as remote viewer. I'm reading you from page.
Well, actually, ma'am, we don't have too much time for you to read things. If you just tell us the meat of the story, that we're more interested in that.
We'd like to hear what happened to her.
Yeah, we'd like to hear what happened to you.
CIA is heavily involved in this insidious technique. They can not only remote view, but remote intercede. In other words, they can come and do things. Inject you or whatever.
So the CIA came into your house and injected you is what you're saying.
Now there's another book.
Okay, I'm sorry, we just can't keep having the quotations because we only have a few minutes left. But thanks for that information, and we have a lot of other people that apparently have all sorts of other stories to share as well.
This radio station's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Good evening. I was wondering whether you people are familiar with the IEEE Spectrum. Last July, they had a story about how the Greek cell phone company got tapped, and they tapped all the phones of many important Greeks in the government, mm-hmm. all the way up to the premier, and they found the Greek engineer in charge was found hanged. And according to this Spectrum magazine story, the IEEE Spectrum, it was an apparent suicide. Though when you read it, you find the complexity. All the evidence that was destroyed, it's far from being accidental in destroying a lot of the evidence. I was wondering whether you guys ever covered that, and maybe you may be interested to read the IEEE magazine for July about the Athens intrigue.
I remember hearing something about this. Do you remember this,
Mike? We did cover it when it happened.
That was in 2005, but now read the IEEE magazine, The Spectrum, and very detailed. This did a good job and show all the evidence that was destroyed.
Is this the current issue of
The July.
July issue of IEEE Spectrum.
Yeah, the current issue has a little statement by somebody saying that why did they, as soon as they found out, they disconnected. The charge was, why, as soon as you find out that the phones were tapped, why did you disconnect? You should have left those connections on and tracked down who was doing the tracking.
Interesting point.
But the guy says that was the guy who's writing in this month's Spectrum says that was a prudent thing. But, here's a technical magazine saying something was prudent. It's a value judgment. why was it prudent? I think maybe finding out who was doing the tapping would have been more prudent from another point of view.
Oh, definitely.
Just like the July magazine say it was an apparent suicide, and then they go into great detail telling you of all the unlikely things that happened, how all evidence got destroyed. So to me, it's far from being a suicide. It sounds like a murder that this guy was hung. If he was found hung just a couple of weeks before he was going to get married, they gave no reason. Uh-huh. They gave no evidence or reason for him committing suicide by hanging a couple of weeks before his death.
Okay, well, you've given us a lot to think about, and we're definitely going to check into that magazine as well. Thanks for calling, sharing that with us. We have a bunch more calls. I can hardly wait to see who else is on the line today. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. You? What's on your mind?
All right.
Turn on your radio.
I wanted to mention to the fact that for the last couple of days, I'm hearing all these stories about how 9/11 was, constructed and they carried out in the United States with the knowledge of our government. If that's the case, don't we owe the American citizens of East Indian heritage and also Arab heritage that took a lot of harassment and apology?
Well, I think we owe them an apology regardless, but that's there are a lot of theories and conjecture being thrown around out there, and in the end, you just have to look at the facts, look at all the different presentations, and don't listen to anybody else. Just use your own judgment. That's my advice.
I would suggest that you use Occam's razor, which for this event, I think we should rename Occam's box cutter. The idea that the simplest explanation is usually the best.
All right. Thanks for that call. Let's take another one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Turn down your radio, please. Go ahead.
Thanks for that call. Let's
take one. All right. You know, we got to move faster than that. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up.
Yeah. Hi, Colonel John Alexander on Coast to Coast AM 9.
Okay, you called already, you know, and it's like we didn't move on to anyone else. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up. Turn down your radio.
Yeah, the champ is here with this week's phone floor. But before I give you this week's phone floor, I just want to ask Jim whether he got in my...
I haven't seen it yet, Rebel. Right. Get to the point. You had a good point.
Yeah, you had a point, so get to it.
Yeah, the point is that...
This may be one of the weeks where you actually have a point.
All right, Bayside, Queens. In the 718-229 and 225 exchanges, you can make free phone calls by dialing 10-NYT-0, which is the old New York telephone carrier access code.
Is this a call from 10 years ago?
No.
It's not a call from 10 years ago.
This works now, he says.
This is a real, okay. What year is it, Rebel? What year is this now?
This is 2007, and this still works.
No, he's right about that. Okay, so he's not being transformed from, okay, go ahead.
All right, 10-NYT-0, it will give you an ANI failure. You could give her any number in the 718 or 212 area code,
mm-hmm.
and you can make free phone calls that way from payphones.
From payphones.
The number of a payphone. And also, many commercials want you to text, and of course, it's like dialing a 900 number. And also, I got a joke for everybody. Not a joke, but a trick that I like to play on people.
That would be the phone call?
All right. Well, yeah. I think I've already been the victim of this trick, but go ahead.
You know when people, all right, the voice response system, you hear people saying 1, 2, and you can't use touch tones. I was in an office one time. I heard somebody, you know, some woman at a desk saying 1. Yes.
Right.
3. And I said over her voice, when she would say 1, I'd say 3. When she would say yes, I'd say no.
Oh, you must have been so popular there.
This look.
Uh-huh.
And also, I want to give you my...
Wait, that was the joke?
It's a joke to the people, because she gives me the dirty look like I'm, you know...
No, that's not a joke. She was serious.
Yeah, you know, I think that's enough humor for one night, Rebel.
We're
trying to be serious here.
You deserve a dirty look if you're talking over someone's phone call. Kind of confused.
Yeah, or even in the same room while someone's talking on the phone. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to say, of all the 9/11 conspiracy stuff and everything that I've seen,
mm-hmm.
The one that doesn't get too ridiculous, it's I don't know if you've seen it, it's called Zeitgeist.
Okay.
The website, zeitgeistmovie.com.
All right, tell us about it.
It's got three parts. The first part shows, which is pretty much all common knowledge should be,
mm-hmm.
how Christianity basically stole all different traditions and
All right, let's skip over that for now so we don't have another 10-hour discussion about that.
I just tuned in, so I don't know.
All right, what's the second part?
You know, the second part shows you the 9/11 doesn't, you know, get too ridiculous with, you know, disappearing planes. It just shows a lot of facts, a lot of more evidence of the explosions or implosions, however you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then part three goes into the microchips, which is pretty scary because it's almost impossible to buy a puppy nowadays. Nowadays, it's not chipped. So, I mean, that's where these companies are making a lot of their money now, on animals and packages. And, you know, they really are doing it to people. I mean, whether you think everyone's going to be chipped and it's going to be like a Orwellian thing or not, it really is happening, and people have to at least be aware that.
Well, when they start with the puppies, you know that they're going to do more after that.
But they're very, very close-range chips. You can't read them very far. I mean, they're not ideal as tracking devices unless you have this incredible infrastructure of RFID readers very, very close in proximity to the subject.
But it's for your own good. If you go to a doctor, he can instantly tell your blood type and all kinds of other things, diseases and allergies and things like that. You'd be a fool not to get one.
Well, the way it's marketed for pets, and it does work, I'm not sure if it's a good idea, is that I guess if you lose your pet, they can take it to the vet and scan the pet and know what its name is.
So would you treat your child any less than you would treat your pet?
I think it's a good idea for pets. I mean,
What? You want your child to be lost, and when they take him to the vet, you want to know who he is? No.
I might prefer that.
But why chip your dog when you can just have a collar?
Because why chip your baby when you can have a collar?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but we're going to have to explore that later. I want to try to get one more last call in, only because I think it might be a good one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please, and quickly. Now, you see, okay, you're banned now, Rebel. You're banned for another week. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Please don't call if you've already called, as many people haven't called. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, hey.
Hi.
Well, this is a great way to end it, but I was just thinking of that first caller. He was talking about that trying to link Al-Qaeda with the CIA.
Uh-huh.
That might have been off of what you were talking about on Off the Wall last night with Sahab.net.
Uh-huh. Well, we talked about it today, too, for a little bit.
Oh, I just tuned in.
Yeah.
So I just got to the house.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's possible. Anything's possible. We have to look into it with a critical eye. But thanks for calling, and thanks for having the last word. We'll be back again next week. I'll be in Austria. Everyone else will be here. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. Have a good night.
You seek of only vanity and no love for humanity shall fade away, fade away. You checks for only wealth and not for his physical health shall fade away, fade away. Though some believe in diamonds and pearl and feel like they're on top of the world, they shall fade away, hear what I say. The rich is getting richer every day, and the little that the poor man got, it shall be taken away. Do you hear what I say? Yeah, hear what I say. The man who worships silver and gold shall surely, surely, surely lose his own soul, then fade away. One who's always acting smart and don't carry no love in his heart shall fade away.